up, Uncle Jimmy? It's time for Grease the Wheels, the podcast. Come on, man. Where the fuck are you?
Hey.
Hey, it's Uncle Jimmy. I'm awake. I'm up.
But Mom, I don't want to go to school.
Hey, listen, I got to apologize to you guys for the late start with the podcast this week and to Eric, the producer, who's been waiting all week to get it busted out so he can get it out to you guys. Sorry about that. That's your Uncle Jimmy's fault. He fell three nights in a row. Fell asleep practically with my head on the microphone. No shit. Not kidding. Dead dog tired. I haven't been this tired in a while. Of course, I was, living it up, right? You don't even know how, man. All right. Hey, it's Grease the Wheels podcast coming to you automotive technicians out there with the wrenches and the screwdrivers and the hammers and the whatever else you have. Hey, thanks for listening. I want to say, I've been doing this a lot lately. I'm just going to make it a little brief today. Thanks for listening. Thanks for what you do. Thanks for keeping the planet moving. Lots of stuff gets done, fixed, corrected, and made to go again. Thanks to you. Thank you very much for what you do. Your Uncle Jimmy loves y'all. All of you. Loves you all. Y'all. Got to say it like a Texan. Loves y'all. All right. Hey, last week's podcast was about how we should feel about our customers. And you know what? You can take that to heart all you want. I was as sincere as I could possibly be about that. I really feel like we need to have a great deal of empathy for our customers. Sympathy, maybe even, if you want to look at it that way. And I believe that's true. Okay. However, there's always two sides to every story, isn't there now? Yes, there is. And this is one of the things that I preach quite a bit in my life is that when somebody tells you a story, when somebody tells you what happened, when somebody tells you about something that happened, trying to elicit a response from you of any kind, whether you're a judge or a jury or a lawyer or your mom or your dad or your wife or your husband or whatever you have in your life, when you tell them a story, it's important for everyone involved to realize that they're getting exactly one fucking side of the story. And that no matter what or who you are, you're going to leave out certain details that make you look like an asshole. It always happens. So what I wanted to call this particular podcast this week is, and I finally got it in, this one in keeping with the Beatles theme is called I Should Have Known Better. And what I wanted to do is take apart some of the things that our customers do, some of the things that they say, some of the things that they want, and whether or not they should even want them at all. And some of the things that they say that aren't good, and some of the things they say, maybe they aren't so good, but maybe they're true. I wanted to take last week's podcast and flip it on its side and look at the other side of it, okay? Now, for some of you out there, I know that there's quite a few of you out there who will do side work. And I applaud you massively for doing side work because it's you particular gentlemen and ladies, if ladies are doing it, when you do side work, you get a really good glimpse of how much money a shop or a dealership makes. Because I'll tell you something right now, that if you do side work and you get people to come to you and go, oh, I need to have this done, and then you tell them how much you're going to charge them. Now, I don't know of anybody out there, really, honestly, who is personally doing work on people's cars and charging them $200, $300, even upwards of $400 an hour. It's just not happening. You're not going to do that. If you're a mechanic, you're a technician, I don't care what you want to call yourself. Call yourself whatever you want. But if you're out there and you're fixing stuff for people on the side in your garage, at your house, maybe on the side of the road, maybe at a friend's house, maybe you go to other people's places, maybe you're a freelance mobile technician, whatever it is you do, you're probably not charging even half of what a shop would charge. You're not charging even half because, frankly, you don't have the overhead that a shop has. You don't have all the expenses that a shop has. You probably might not even have insurance. Who knows? You might have a regular day job that provides you with insurance, healthcare insurance, whatever. If you're working on the side, man, it's pure profit for you. But if you're working on the side, you are going to have some very happy people as customers, especially if they know how much a regular, like an independent shop or perhaps even a dealership would charge for a repair that you're willing to do for a couple of $100 and a 12 pack. You're going to be saving them anywhere from $400 to $800 to $1,000, $2,000, even $5,000. Seriously, I'm not making that up, man. I want you to go, if you're working at a shop or a dealership, I want you to take a repair that you're going to make in the next couple of days, maybe tomorrow, maybe the next day, maybe a day after that. And I want you to look at the estimate that you're going to make. Okay. Let's say you get a car. This is the proverbial grease the wheels repair. Car comes in and needs a water pump. Okay. It's 3 hours, hour diag, 4 hours. and the water pump itself is $300. So the shop's charging $200 an hour, just to make it nice and even. So at 4 hours, that's $800. And the water pump's, what would I say, $250. So you're looking at $1,050 plus tax. Hello. Now, you've done that job probably, let's just say, a dozen times. And you can do it in probably 45 minutes. So if somebody came up to you at your house and said, hey, man, I need a water pump my car. And it's the same car, same kind of car, maybe even the same person. They say, you want to, you know, tear it up for me? And they go, yeah, you know, I could do it. Can you save me some money over the dealer? I go, you know, if it's only going to take me 45 minutes, you could tell them that you'll charge them $500 and you'll buy the water pump. They'll fucking fall down. And then when they wake up, you'll be like, yeah, that's how much I'll charge. And hell, it's a great deal for you, right? But what I want to talk to you about this week is not saving people a lot of money and having empathy for them. I want to talk to you about what people are going to do to you. I'd say probably in the world, and I'm just going to make a fucking wicked stab at this, 75% of the people on this planet are good, morally good, professionally good, everything. They're just good at what they do, or maybe they're just good people. Maybe they're both. I know an awful lot of people who are very good, honest, trustworthy, upright citizens, and I enjoy that about them. But I know a few other people, and unfortunately, I know more than I wish I did, who would just as soon stab you than do a favor for you, and they will take your wallet in the process. They'll rip you off, honestly. They'll rip you off, and they'll feel fine with it. They'll be fine with it. They don't have any morals. There's no integrity there. You know, they're just bad people. And unfortunately, I think in the automotive industry, in the business that we're in, we get more than our fair share of this. And, you know, in a lot of cases, we refer to some of these customers, if they're females, we refer to them as Karens. I don't even think that that's fair, because a Karen is just going to complain about something that you did for them, and maybe you charge them a fair price and they just don't feel like it's a fair price. And they want to talk to somebody about it. Okay, whatever. But then you get other people who are going to, you know, pay you with a bad check or pay you with a credit card that they stole or found on the side of the road. I mean, literally, they're gonna try to steal your services. And if you work for a shop or a dealership, that really isn't any of your business, quite frankly. I mean, if you're getting paid by the shop and the shop takes a bad check, or they swipe a credit card wrong, or maybe they let a car go and they'd say, you know, the guy says, oh, you know, come back tomorrow with the money, and it never shows up. That's not your business. Okay. But if you're going to do jobs on the side, if you're going to work for people on the side, man, you got to watch the fuck out. Because a lot of times these people are trying to fucking get in your shorts, get something fixed, and then disappear. I remember years ago, there was a case where a guy fixed a car for another guy, and he had a shop. And it was just a little indie shop, maybe a couple, two, three guys. And he fixed a car for a guy. And the guy had given him a fake name and a fake address and even a fake phone number. And he called up one day and he said, oh, hey, is my car done? He goes, yeah, your car's done. You can come pick it up anytime. And he went down after hours with an extra set of keys and took the car. Well, that guy who, you know, the guy owned the repair shop, he figured out where this guy was. And he went over and he vandalized the living shit out of that guy's car. Fuck you, asshole. And so listen, I mean, this stuff happens, and it unfortunately happens a lot, especially in the particular business that we're in. And, you know, if you're going to do it on the side, I just want you to be careful. Now, I should have known better when I was talking to you last week about customers. And I think, like I said, about 75% of the customers that come into your place are good people. They honestly need whatever it is that you're trying to sell them. They honestly want to get that stuff fixed. Maybe they can't afford it. Maybe they don't want that car anymore. That happens too. They're good people, and they're fun to deal with sometimes, and they're polite, and they're kind. But and what I was trying to get to was that them having a car problem can turn good people, kind people, people who have manners and are just, you know, the very, very upright citizens. It can sometimes turn them into assholes. It can. I mean, you know, I mean, if somebody came and stole your car or took your car and you had to walk to work and you live 10 miles away from work, and it would ruin your life. And so that's what I was trying to get through to you last week, is that the car and people's mobile transportation devices, personal transportation devices, they're important to them. And to some people, they're so important that they would gladly bend the rules or break them or break the law and steal your services. So you need to watch out for them, okay? Now, I was, as per usual, I was on the internet looking around at stuff, and I wanted to find some input on how to deal with difficult customers or customers who are trying to rip you off. And you know what I found? almost nothing. There's literally almost nothing. I put in there dealing with difficult customers in an auto repair shop, and all that came back was that people want to know how to keep from getting ripped off by the mechanics, by the technicians, or by the shop themselves. And I was like, wow, is this really that pervasive of a problem? Is it that bad? And I want to say, fuck no, it's not as bad as anybody thinks it is. Yeah, sure. I'm not naive, okay? Well, maybe a little, but I know that probably, let me pick a number out of thin air. This is what we do here at Grease the Wheels. We just make shit up. I'd say 90% of the technicians out there in the world right now who are working at a shop anywhere, or maybe even doing side jobs or working at home or doing mobile or, you know, working at Indies, whatever, 90% of the technicians out there are doing the job right. They're doing it the best they can, and they're charging a fair price, or at least the shop is. And they're getting paid to do that job for that shop if they're a technician. And the pay must be okay. I mean, maybe it's a little low. Maybe it's really low. Who knows? If you've agreed to work for that, well, then that's on you. You know, I've said 1,000 times, it's called Grease the Wheels for a fucking reason. You feel like you're worth more than what you're being paid. If you bring more value to the job than they know about, you know, if you're doing the job really, really well, and they're just not acknowledging the fact that you're killing it, go somewhere else where they'll recognize your talent, your skills, whatever you have, your training, your skills, your talent, your experience, all that stuff. Go somewhere where they will pay you. I don't think that they intend to rip you off, but if you work for somebody for 5 years, you start out really literally just sweeping the fucking floor. And then after 5 years, you're all of a sudden balls deep in a car, connecting rod bearings, putting pistons in them and rebuilding engines and trannies, and you're putting them all back together and they work great. And you really learned a lot, and you're a really good, honest, hardworking technician, and they're still paying you the same money they were paying you when you swept the floor. You got to go. You work for idiots. I'll tell you honestly, myself personally, everywhere I've ever worked, I've gotten raises everywhere, even places where they kind of didn't like me that much. Well, I'm kind of a clown. I can understand that a little bit. But everywhere I've worked, I've gotten raises without ever having to ask for them, because I just come in and I do what I need to do. And the people see that I'm diligent and I'm going at it. I'm trying to do the job absolutely the best I can. And I give them 100%. In fact, I would like to thinking back to some of the days when I used to work for some of these other dealers, and the one I'm at now, I'm giving them 110%, really. I never usually leave before 7, you know, so I'm there getting the job done, doing the job, getting it, you know, cleaning up after myself and sometimes the guys around me. So if this is something that's happening to you where they're not recognizing the skill and the talents, you got to grease the wheels, bro. Get out. Don't let your employer rip you off either. And you know what? Here's the thing with them. And I want to flip this, because here you're going to, you know, here on Grease the Wheels, you're going to get both sides of the fence. Okay. You might feel like you're underpaid and that you're worth more than what they're paying you. And that they haven't offered to give you a raise in several years. And every time you bring it up, they change the subject, and maybe they come back and they give you a title. You know, you're the second assistant foreman in charge of, oil drains or something like that. You know, they give you a title. I love it when I've seen that actually quite a bit, where people get a job title instead of a raise. It's like, look, you can call me fucking Obi-Wan Kenobi all you want. It's like, you got to give me more money, okay? Because I got to buy a new lightsaber. No, what I'm trying to get at is that as a technician, don't let anybody rip you off, whether it's a customer or a shop. And if a shop is trying to, you know, not pay you what you're worth, then you need to go. You need to look around. And I think, you know, and I tell you every time, and sometimes I don't bring it to you very often. Sometimes I don't talk about it too much, but there's just a fucking unbelievable shortage of technicians out there. And what some shops are doing is they're trying to spackle the gaps in the bricks with new guys. You know, they hire them up, and suddenly once they're hired, they're technicians. They go, not really. So figure out what you're worth. I know I'm rambling and I apologize, but having somebody rip you off can take many, many forms. Having somebody undervalue you, having somebody not pay you, that takes many forms, whether it's an employer or a customer, or, you know, maybe it's a side job that you're doing for somebody, or maybe it's family. I used to fix a lot of stuff for the people in my family, and I would just make them feed me, and they're really going to feed me anyway. It's kind of one of the things they do. They feel like if they don't feed me, I don't eat. But if you ever saw me, you'd be like, yeah, no, he's not having a problem eating. So he's not having a problem with food intake. Okay. So, you know, you can lay, lay off a little bit if you want. But I did find some stuff on this. And like I said, it was mostly, let me just click this one open here. It was dealing with difficult customers. This one was just basically difficult customers in every form of business there is out there. Okay. And this is going to be aimed at you if you're running your own shop or if you're a customer facing kind of a mechanic at a shop. Some dealerships do this too, where the mechanics will actually be their own service advisors. I haven't seen it very often, but I have heard of it. It's actually, I think it's a pretty good idea because who's better to sell a job to a customer than the technician? And if the technician's got even a modicum of charisma and he can communicate well and he's, you know, he can speak the language of the people he's talking to, which is, you know, sometimes doesn't happen. You know, you get a customer comes in and all they speak is Spanish and you're you're not bilingual, you're a single lingual, uno lingual. You know, you just can't communicate with them and maybe you have to get somebody else in the shop to come help them or maybe you need to click the phone on to translate and do it through that. But if you can communicate effectively and if you can make yourself understood and you have empathy for customers, then likely they'll respond. Okay. Now, sometimes customers are very angry that their car is broken and they got to take it out on somebody. And that's an unfortunate situation. And that's why being a service advisor is tough. And that's why a lot of people can't do it because, you know, you could conceivably, and I've talked about this before, as a service advisor, you could conceivably be talking to the first customer of the day and he's pissed because of something that happened to his car. And then you say, okay, listen, you're in the right place. I'm going to get you taken care of. We're going to straighten out this problem. Have a seat. Or if you need a loaner, whatever, here's some water. Here's a bagel. Here's a granola bar, whatever it is that trips your trigger. Just take a deep breath, calm down. We've got your back. This is what we do here. We fix them here. All right. But the guy's still upset. You calm down a little bit. You get the car in the shop. And then the next customer that rolls in the door is pissed off again. It's like after a while, man, that's gotta fucking wear you out. I mean, it's like how many fucking problems am I going to be dealing with today? It's like, and you know, you gets to be like 10, 11 o'clock. And you've written six ROs and each one of them was kind of a prick about the fact that their car is fucked up and your empathy is at its all time low. So is your morale, you know, as my friend used to say, morale at an all time low. It's like it will ruin you. And as far as service advisors go, they have to know that that's what's coming. If somebody takes a job as a service advisor, they have to know that shit is going to be that's what it's going to be. It is what they say. It is what it is. And the only thing you can do is try to smile through the whole thing. You know, treat these people like they were your family and you empathize with the problem they're having and you're going to straighten them out. And oh, by the way, you're going to fucking charge them. Which is a real concept with family for me. Anyway, I almost never charge my family anything to help them fix their shit. You know, like I said, they just pay me in food. Usually it's pretty goddamn good food though, I gotta say. But I want to broad stroke this one. It's called dealing with difficult customers, learning how to deal with difficult customers. This is for really anybody in business. And the first thing they do here is recognizing difficult customers. And I want to say there's four things here that kind of define a difficult customer. And you may be the cause of these. And so if you're causing this, maybe you need to reexamine how you deal with customers. You know, if you're an advisor or if you're a general manager or a service manager or even just a carporter or if you're doing mobile work as a technician or if you're doing side jobs, all this shit's the same. Okay. People are the same. They all want the same thing. They want their shit fixed, but they want it fixed right away. And that's a problem nowadays. That's a really big fucking problem nowadays. And we're going to get to that at the end of the podcast here. We're going to tell you, we're going to talk about that. But here's some of the things that a difficult customer, some of the traits that they will display, some of the conditions that they will have. And they will present them to you. They may just poke you with them like a shark stick, or they may hit you in the side of the head like a baseball bat, but they're going to be argumentative. Okay. You get that. If you've ever dealt with customers, I have. I was in auto parts for a long, long time. People used to argue with me all the fucking time. And I wasn't always wrong. I wasn't always right either, but I wasn't always wrong. And the customer, you know, and this is what I'm going to talk to you about at the end here. The customer isn't always right. Customers, in fact, honestly, in the business, the way it exists now, customers rarely right, but they should change that. Customers should be happy. And if you can't make them happy, well, then, you know what? I'm just going to tell you, it's the grease the wheels mantra. If the customer can't be happy no matter what you do, fuck them. Fuck them. Seriously. You do what you can, if you can, and it doesn't help, then fuck them. You have to cut your losses, you know. You have to retreat. Go back and help somebody else. Maybe they'll appreciate it. Argumentative? Yeah, sure. That shit happens all the fucking time. People go, oh, I don't need this or I don't need that. I had it's funny because we had a situation the other day, and this happened to one of the guys in my shop. This guy is he's a very unusual cat, but I like him a real lot. And he had a customer that had a coolant leak in her car. It was pretty obvious. And so he said, oh, you need an upper radiator hose. It's leaking. And so the guy goes, well, he's talking to the service advisor. He goes, oh, I want to see it. I want to see it, right? So he comes out with the service advisor, and they show him that the fucking hose is leaking. It is leaking. And the guy puts his hand on it, and he gets coolant all over his fucking hand. And he goes, oh, it's not leaking. And then the advisor and the technician look at each other and just go, okay, out the door your car goes. He obviously didn't want that hose. He probably thought, and this is good, he probably thought, I'll just buy it at AutoZone and put it on myself. Good fucking luck. Because this is one of those radiator hoses that comes out of the radiator. And at the radiator, oh yeah, real super easy to change that end of it. The other end, however, is fucking buried underneath the intake manifold. And myself and my associates, we don't have too much trouble getting it off without taking the intake manifold off. But I can tell you what, it's not easy. And it takes a specific kind of a technique, but you can get it done. And then you're going to end up with a big puddle of coolant underneath the car, and you're going to have to fill it up. And we have special devices for filling the cars properly, which most customers do not have. So this is just an illustration of what you run into. And I mean, it happens all the time. Most of the time, if you're a guy like me, flat rate guy in the back, you know how they keep us in the back like caged monkeys. like it's a zoo or something. They keep us in the back and we don't have to deal with customers. And I think that's a really great thing because there's probably a few of us, maybe myself included, who really wouldn't do very well having to deal with customers on a regular basis. I think I'd probably be all right until somebody got real argumentative with me and then it might come to blows. Who knows? I don't think so, but I mean, it could conceivably. I mean, when somebody's wrong and they insist that they're right and they're just not right. And you're just like, you just want to smack them about the head and neck area until they realize either that you're right or they're dead. Then you don't want to do that. I can't condone violence here and grease the wheels. Sorry. Don't do it. It's very satisfying, but it's also really, really bad. Don't do that. Here's another thing they're demanding. I run into that too. They say, oh, I want to have my car fixed by 1 o'clock. And here it is, 12:55. It's like, well, you're going to have to wait about 12 plus hours because there's another 1 o'clock coming right after midnight and your car might be done by then. But in 5 minutes, yeah, not so much. Not going to get done in 5 minutes, and they'll demand. And this is something that we have, I think in our place, we've gotten a little bit of a handle on it, but for a while, our service advisors were not dealing with this properly. A customer says, oh, I want to get this done. I want to get that done. I want to get this done. I want to get that done. And I need my car by 4. And it's quarter after 2 already. And you're selling 6, 8, 10 hours worth of work. And they want it done in 3 hours, 3.5 hours. And I don't even know if we have all the parts. This was happening a lot because of what the customers demand. And it's a problem. That can be a really big problem because all you have to do is just say, okay, or I'll see, or I'll try. No, you have to say, I'm sorry, that's not doable at all. If you want it done by 4 o'clock, it's going to be 4 o'clock tomorrow. We're talking about 8, 10, 12 hours worth of work. I mean, unless you got a DeLorean at home and you want to come down and let us take it for a ride and go 88 miles an hour, we'll fix it on the fucking assembly line before it was built. How about that? But we don't have that. We don't have time machines. So you need to, adjust these people's expectations. And I talk about it so much. It sounds like a broken record, but when a service advisor is talking to a customer and they're demanding or they insist on having their car at a certain time or they got to have it right now or they need it before this at such and such a time, you just have to let them know it's not going to be doable. You have to lower their expectations. Here's the deal. And I've said it a million times. Here comes one more time. And I'm sorry if you've heard it a million times. Here it's 1,000,001. Somebody comes in and says they want their car done by 1 o'clock and it's like 10 o'clock and it's, you know, it's a 3-hour job. You have to just say, I'm sorry, but we're not going to be able to make that 1 o'clock. If you want to call me at 5, I'll let you know if it was done. But for right now, we're going to look at tomorrow morning, possibly tomorrow afternoon before we can get this finished. Now, if you were able to get that done by like 2 or 3 that day, then yeah, you've lowered the customer's expectations, but then you exceeded their new lowered expectations. That's a win-win situation for you. That's something I can't, there's nobody in the world that can teach that, because the first thing anybody says right after they say, yeah, go ahead and fix it, is how long is it going to take? And what you need to say, and this is just your Uncle Jimmy saying this, what you need to say is, if everything goes okay, you know, I mean, barring any unforeseen circumstances, they should all learn to say that. If everything goes right, if the parts are correct and they go in properly and they don't break and we don't break anything else and something else isn't wrong, then yeah, we could probably have it done for you tomorrow by noon. But I want you to expect not to have it done by noon tomorrow, so that when I have it done by noon tomorrow, you'll be pleasantly surprised instead of upset. Because especially now, it's a let me just say this correctly, okay, because I want to be understood. It's a big problem, because now the average age of the car on the road is 12 and a half fucking years. I'm ruining that for you guys. I apologize. But it's not all my fault either, okay? So for every brand new car you sell, that means there's one that's out there that's 24 fucking years old. Holy shit. I mean, it doesn't work exactly like that, but it's fucking close, right? I mean, how do you get an average? Well, you got to have one on one side and one on the other side, and they got to average each other out. And when it becomes 12 and a half, you're like, holy fucking shit. That means there's some 24-year-old cars out there running around, and maybe even older. Can't get any newer than built today. You know, obviously, you can't get any newer than that, but you can go all the way back. I'm killing it. I got a 68 Cutlass. I just finished driving it around. Because I lent my truck to somebody, so I got to drive that. Yeah, what is that? 68, that's 50. I mean, I'm not very good at math sometimes. You know, well, you guys know that. 56 years old. For Christ's sakes, my fucking car's been getting mail from AARP. Fuck. He's saying, is he still driving you? Does he still drive you hard? I go, yes, he does. Hey, it fucking loves it. So demanding, and you can always, so a difficult customer is going to be demanding. Okay, that's one of the hallmarks of a difficult customer. You have to be able to reason with them and lower their expectations. The next one is being impatient, which goes along with all of those other ones. Here's the problem with being impatient. How in the fuck can any customer who brings his or her car in for service or repairs anywhere on the fucking planet, how can they be impatient when they don't have a fucking clue, A, what's wrong, B, how long it's going to take to fucking fix it? How can they be impatient? I can't tell you how many times this happened to me last week. We got a waiter team in our place, and sometimes they get a little overwhelmed, so I help out with that, and I don't have any qualms about helping out with that. I understand what's going on. They're sitting in our waiting area. Our waiting area is fairly comfortable, but still, it's a waiting area, and I know that most people can be patient up to a point. They can wait up to a point, and then all of a sudden, that's it. It's over. They can no longer wait. They become impatient. They want to leave now. They want their car done right now. You might have just gotten that car from your dispatcher an hour ago, and there's 3 hours worth of work on it, and you're in the middle of it. And so what you get is a service advisor coming out and goes, how much longer? What do you mean, how much longer? It's you wrote fucking 9 goddamn lines. Figure about 20 minutes per line. 9 times 2 is 180. That's 3 fucking hours, pal. I've only been on it for an hour. Well, the customer says they got to go. Well, you didn't properly prepare that customer for a 9-line waiter. Okay? If they're impatient, sorry. Sounds like a fucking you problem to me. Hey, I'll be honest with you. I can't rush. I can go fairly quickly. Okay? But I have to temper how fast I go to make sure I don't make mistakes. And when I start to go fast, when I speed up, when I'm trying to do it as quickly as possible because somebody's waiting and they need their vehicle right now, That's when mistakes are going to happen. I don't give a fuck who you are. It's just the same for everybody. So if you're having to deal with somebody who's impatient, they can be a difficult customer. The other one, the last one, and this one, I think it just irks the shit out of the service advisors more than anything, really. Because I don't think, you know, if you're working in a shop where you have a service advisor or somebody who tries to sell the repairs that you recommend, this is something that breaks their ass hard, and it's indecision. If they're indecisive, they can't decide whether or not they want to spend $500 to do the brakes or get an oil change, whatever it is, they can't figure. They can't. I got to call somebody. That's one of the ones you'll hear, and that's the worst. Okay, if you are terrible at selling, you're going to hear that a lot. Well, I gotta call my dad. I gotta call my uncle. I gotta call Joe Biden. I don't know. You know, you gotta call somebody to get some sort of input. And maybe bad input. Who knows? I mean, I've had calls from people who say, "Oh, they want to put a Garfunkel valve on my car, and they say it's going to cost $400 and take labor is going to be $1,000." And I said, "Garfunkel valve? I don't even know what that is." You know, I mean, I know what a Simon and Garfunkel is, but I don't know what a Garfunkel valve is. And I mean, you know, you might laugh at that, and maybe it would be funny. If it didn't happen to people all the fucking time, it does. It happens to them all the time. And this is another reason why they're indecisive. Because I think everybody who's owned a car for more than 10 years can point to a situation they were in at some point in time where they are either sure or think they got ripped off. And they either may or may not have, actually. My mother, God rest her soul, I loved her so much, but she... She used to regale me with a tale about how she went to Midas and they wanted to change the entire exhaust system. And then she said, "Put my car down on the ground. I'm leaving. You're not putting anything on my car. Basically, fuck off." She was too proper for that. She would never say that. She went to another shop and they said, "All you need is a tailpipe." And she said, "I knew it." And she would tell that story for years. And she passed away. It was about 10 years ago. So, I asked her one time, I said, "When did this happen to you?" And she thought about it for a minute. And this was back before the Alzheimer's had really gripped her head and made it not useful. And she said, "Oh, it happened in 1971. So it happened almost 60 years ago. But she remembered it. And that's what's going to happen with your customers. They're going to remember that shit. They're not going to remember that they got great service here or great service there. Maybe they will, but they're definitely going to remember when they get shit service, okay? Now, when you're dealing with a difficult customer, here's some tips, and I'm going to broad stroke the shit out of this, but here's some tips that help you deal with them if you're dealing with them in any way, shape, or form. And some of this stuff is from last week, okay? I'm going to be honest with you. This is how you can take a customer who is giving you a hard fucking time and maybe even being loud and obnoxious and threatening to sue you. That's always a fun one, because if everybody got sued as often as they said they were going to sue somebody, we'd all be fucking lawyers, seriously. We'd all be broke too, probably. A very litigious society we live in, and I think that something needs to happen. But as long as the lawyers are in control, nothing's going to happen to that. So, but here's the tips. Let me read them off for you here. There's, I don't even know how many. They didn't count them, and it's probably a good thing because I think it's an odd number. The number one thing to do if you're dealing with a difficult customer is to keep it professional. Remember, you want to remember that they're not really mad at you, per se. They're mad at the situation. And if you're the person that they're talking to, and it's really irregardless of what your job title is, keep a professional, okay? If I was a technician, which, hey, by the way, I am, and a customer comes up to me and says, "Geez, you know, I'm having trouble with this, and then, you know, you guys did this and you guys did that," and I go, "Oh, no, wait a minute. Show me what you're talking about." Use tones like that. You know, just go to, "Hey, hang on. We fix them here, okay? So show me what you got. Maybe we can get you fixed up." You'd be surprised. Sometimes people are very upset about the dumbest fucking shit, and all you got to do is maybe change a fuse or put some washer solvent in, or maybe adjust a headlight, put a headlight bulb in. Sometimes putting a headlight bulb in is a real chore. I understand that better than most. Maybe putting air in a tire. Maybe just looking at a tire. Maybe just looking at the car. I've had people come over to my shop, my own personal shop. I've had them come into where I work, and they say, "Hey, can you just take a look at this real quick?" And you just go, "Yeah, sure. What are we looking at?" And they'll go, "I got a great big dent in the doors." Well, you know, go down to the hardware store and get a suction cup and pull it out. "Really? Yeah, give it a shot. What the hell? Can't hurt it any more than it already is." And then they come back later and go, "Hey, guess what? That suction cup trick, that worked. That was pretty cool." But if you keep it professional, you want to be the pro. You are the pro. If you're listening to this and you're in the business and you're doing what you do, you're the pro. Act like it. Number two, and this is really, I want to say this should be number one. If they had numbered this list, this would be my number one. Listen to the customer. Sometimes, and I mean probably literally 50%, maybe even more, that's all they want is just for someone to listen to what the fuck they're saying. And so, and you know what? Sometimes your response doesn't even matter. Sometimes it does, but sometimes it doesn't. If somebody comes up to you and says, why is it every time I come in here and you guys change my oil, you get dirt on, I don't know, pick something. You get dirt on my license plate. And you might say, well, I say, we have a car wash, and the car wash sometimes has a little feeler, and the feeler gets dirty. And if it touches your license plate to indicate where the car is in the car wash, it can leave some dirt on the license plate. There it is. You listened, you offered an answer. And if they're listening, they'd be like, oh, okay. If you want, I'll go wipe it off. And that way, next time you come through our car wash, won't do it. Cool. You listened. It sounded stupid, didn't it? But you listened and you said, oh, we'll take care of it. We'll take care of it. Thanks for filling us in on that. Because it can't be the only one complaining about that. So I'm serious to heart attack when I tell you sometimes just listening is absolutely the best thing you can do. And this is a really good piece of advice for a whole lot of situations, okay? And what you got to try to do too, I mean, if maybe you're disinterested in what this person is talking about. Maybe you couldn't fucking care less. But try to act sincerely and as if you're interested and as if maybe you can provide a solution. Because I'll tell you what, you're a goddamn auto technician. Let me fill you in on something. You solve problems every fucking day, right? Well, guy comes in, you listen to his problem. You can just go, oh, all you got to do is do this. Oh, okay. And then that's it. You listened. You offered a solution. Boom. Done. Number three is something that your Uncle Jimmy has a little trouble with sometimes. Remain calm. Customers are angry. Okay, and this is what it says here too, is if a customer is angry, remain calm. Slow down your speech pattern. Speaking slowly can help reduce attention. I can see it happening. If somebody comes up to you and screams at you, hey, you screwed up my car, you stupid son of a bitch. I go, I'm sorry. Are you talking to me? Because I don't refer to myself as a stupid son of a bitch. Why don't you tell me what it is that's causing you to say that? Why don't you show me what you're talking about instead of calling me names? That's not very polite, not very gentlemanly. You know, remain calm. Sometimes if somebody's angry and you remain calm, and I can attest to this, if you remain calm, it makes them angrier. Okay, so you have to kind of pick your battles there. But remaining calm is probably a great starting point. It's certainly not necessary to get all argy-bargy with somebody if they're angry. That's never going to help you out. They'll probably never come back, and you never know who they know. Okay, that's always another problem too. They may know nobody. You may not care that they know anybody, but then later on you talk to a customer who used to come in all the time and say, oh yeah, you know, my cousin came here. It's this guy. He said, you guys did this to his car. And I go, hey, wait a minute. We didn't do that. He just got angry because he thought we did it. We didn't do it. And, well, you guys told him to fuck off. And so he told me not to come here anymore. And I agree that you shouldn't tell a customer to fuck off, even though you want to. next up, it says, mind your nonverbal cues. Yeah. You know, body language, I'm not real good with body language. I know some of it. I'm basically illiterate when it comes to body language. But there's some stuff that you can look at people and you can tell what they're thinking or whether they're interested or disinterested. Mostly being disinterested would be a bad thing. Okay, so mind that is what it's saying. It's don't fold your arms and bat your head back and forth and go, you know, like, when is this guy going to shut the fuck up? Are you done? You know, shit like that. You know, rolling your eyes, that's definitely not good. Because if they see you, oh my God. Crossing your arms, that's always a real kind of a defensive body English kind of thing. I saw that today. You want to kind of stay away from that stuff. It says things, even though it's not saying anything verbal, okay? The next one, it's not numbered, I'm sorry. The next one is be empathetic. We talked about that last week. Yeah, you want to, you know, here's the thing. If a guy has a car and something went wrong with it, and you either can't fix it immediately or it's going to take a while to fix it or something, you got to understand that you could be destroying this guy's world or this lady's world with the fact that you can't fix your car. So, being empathetic means, hey, I understand that you're in a pickle without your car. We'll see what we can do about getting you a loaner or a rental or something. But, you know, we can't fix your car immediately. We might need to get parts. We might not have the right tools. That's lately, that's been a much larger thing than it used to be. Also, too, we don't have anybody who's skilled at it, or maybe, you know, and this is a thing with some of the electric cars. You roll in with an electric car and it's got a problem. Chances are you can't get that if it's got a problem with the electrical system, whether it be the motors or the batteries or all the fucking horseshit between the two. You might be walking for a week or even two, depending on what's wrong and or where it's fucking coming from. So you might want to be like, hey, this car's not going to get you anywhere for a while. We're going to have to do this, this, and this, and it's going to take us a long time to get that done. So let's see what we can do about getting you some transportation. That's being empathetic, is honestly just admitting that everybody needs their car. We'll see what we can do about getting you one. And if you can't, obviously you don't want to offer something you can't come through on. That would be worse than anything, really. Next up, it says, don't be afraid to admit you don't have all the answers. Yeah, I should get that tattooed right on my fucking forehead. Don't be afraid to admit you don't have all the answers, but you're an opinionated son of a bitch, so it sounds like you do. Listen, there's some shit, you guys know this better than anybody, and I know it. Sometimes there's shit that goes wrong with a customer's car, and you have no fucking idea what it is. I mean, obviously, you spend an hour, maybe two, diagnosing something. You're gonna come away with an answer, maybe a good one, maybe not a good one. Who knows? But if somebody says, "What's wrong with my car?" They just rolled in 10 seconds ago. I don't know. Let's get the magic eight ball out. Maybe he knows. Seriously, don't be afraid to say, "I don't have all the answers. It's doing this. It's doing this." I go, well, you know, it sounds like it could be two separate things, but we're not going to know until we get in there and get a look at it. And if you don't have an answer right away, or even if you don't have an answer by the end of the day, you just say, listen, you're still fucking looking at it. You know, whatever you did to this thing, you did a good job because it's not working right at all. offer a solution. That's the next thing on the list. Offer a solution. You know, you got a customer jumping up and down. Find something, because every customer, and some, like I said earlier, some of them just want to be heard. That's why listening is a real good thing to do. But if you listen closely, you can hear a customer almost, they'll ask you to do something for them without actually saying it. They're not going to come out and say, I'd like $500 knocked off my bill. They might say something like, look, that's this bill that you're hitting me with. You know, you guys are taking a long time working on my car. I had to wait for parts. I had to wait for the guy to get the right tools. I go, and the repair is just really expensive. That's what I'm complaining about, is that everything is working against me here. But you heard three things, two of which you can't do anything about, the parts and the tools. But then she said, or he said, that the repair was expensive. Maybe you can say, listen, I'm going to knock off 10% just to help you out with this and to reward you for your patience with us. Okay. I understand being without your car is like literally the worst thing that can happen to you in today's modern society. Being without your car, being without your personal transportation device, easily the worst thing that can happen to you. It just disrupts everything. And if you can offer a resolution, if you can offer a way to ease that, to assuage that somehow or another, man, you got to go ahead and do it. It might cost your company a little bit of money. Maybe they're not going to make this mondo profit on this repair, but you know what? You'll make it up on the next one if that customer's happy with what you did for them. Offer a resolution. And as a technician, that's all we ever do anyway. Offer a resolution. Hey, this is more of a management thing, is to offer a resolution to the customer about their situation. We're going to fix the car. There's nothing really, as I speak to you guys out there right now, I don't think that there's anything that anybody could come up with that happens to a car or gets done to a car that you guys can't fix. I mean, you look at something and it's not doing what it's supposed to do. How long is it going to take you to figure out that it's not doing what it's supposed to do? It doesn't take very long at all for somebody who's got some skill and the brains to think about what's supposed to happen and why it's not. Here's another one. Make it quick. I got to say, I disagree with that one, because when you do something really quick, it diminishes the value of that. Let's say I charge a guy. I mean, and this has happened. You know this has happened. I've seen it happen. I've heard of it happening. I know it happens all the time. The service advisor will fuck up and say, oh, you know, we need to do a water pump in your car. Here's the grease the wheels water pump job scenario. We got to do a water pump in your car. It takes 3 hours. Fine. Can I wait while you do it? Sure. Well, you better make sure that you don't come back up into that waiting lounge until 3 hours have gone by. Because if you charge somebody 3 hours of labor to do something and you do it in 45 minutes, they're going to lose their fucking shit. So making it quick, I'm not sure I agree with that one. You want to solve a customer's problems as quickly as possible. But when you're trying to get paid to solve that problem, you want to make sure that you offer a reasonable labor cost and then do it in a reasonable amount of time. And if you do it too quickly, you might want to park it out back for a while and say, oh, yeah, we're still working on it. Because we know, as flat rate guys, we know, man, it doesn't take 3 hours to do a water pump. I don't give a fuck what you're working on. You could be working on a Stuka or you could be working on an F4 Phantom. It just doesn't take that long to do a water pump and really anything. I mean, yeah, sure, it takes some time to do some of them, you know, because they're in a shit spot. But you can get 4-6 bolts, a little gasket sealer, jam it in there, put the belt back on, call it done. Charging big money. All right, don't overpromise is the next one here. Don't overpromise. I used to have these things. I got them somewhere in my toolbox. I'll find them here. Somebody got them for us a while back. I mean, Christ, is probably 20 years now. They were little Lucite blocks, you know, about 2 by 3 inches. And it said UPOD, U-P-O-D, UPOD, under promise, over deliver. Man, I can't get anybody to abide by that anymore. If you under promise and you over deliver, you're going to be a hero. Do the opposite. Over promise and under deliver. You're a fucking turd. Don't over promise. Hey, you got to allow a technician. If you're a service advisor or if you're somebody who sells work or even if you sell the work for yourself, you got to allow yourself some time to do it. And the problem that we have a lot is that customers want to wait, which drives me wild. And we're going to get to that in a little bit here when we talk about the customer is always right. Customers rarely, rarely, rarely ever right, especially in our particular end of the industry, our end of the business. Our customers don't know jack fucking shit about their cars. They don't know a fucking thing about them. If they couldn't put gas in them, they would just go somewhere where they put the gas in for you. That's what they would do. They, you know, maybe they can connect their phone. Maybe they know what the speedometer is supposed to do. Maybe they know how the steering wheel works. I've seen some people that don't know how the steering wheel works. Maybe they know how the brakes work. But other than that, if none of that shit works, they haven't got a fucking clue why that shit doesn't work, why that shit won't work. And if they knew, and I'm telling you honestly here, okay, if they knew how some of that shit does work, they wouldn't want to drive the fucking car. I mean, brake by wire? Dude, we have brake by wire. We've had it for a while. Does it fail? Well, it has a mechanical backup to it. So technically it cannot fail, but it's still brake by wire. It's like, what the fuck are you guys doing? Is that necessary? Well, yes, it is going to be necessary if cars are going to drive themselves, which I've said many times, I don't think it's going to happen. You know, they're out there, manufacturers are out there trying to test the bounds of a self-driving car and saying, oh, our car is self-driving. And then they take it out in the road and they turn the shit on so it can drive itself. And then it promptly crashes into a fucking mountain because somebody forgot to program in the fact that the planet is not flat and level. It's round and bumpy. It's not going to fucking work. I'm sorry. It's just too much random shit that can happen out there. You get some asshole with a 68 Cutlass who fucking comes up behind you and he doesn't want you in front of him, and your car tries to go around that guy automatically while you read the paper. You could end up dead. So don't do it. Listen, don't overpromise your work, underpromise your work, and then overdeliver it. That should be your motto. If you tell them, and we talked about it several other times, even just tonight here, you tell them it's going to take 2 days and then it takes a day, you're the hero. You say it's going to take a day and it takes two, you're the schmuck. Don't be the schmuck. Don't overpromise. Access. Here's the final one. Says access. Oh, excuse me. Man, you can tell it's getting late. Phew. It wasn't access, boys and girls. It was assess, which is ass spelled with an A and ass spelled with an E. Assess. After the issue has been resolved, take some time to reflect on what your shop could have done differently to avoid the conflict. Yeah, really. I mean, that's what you find, and I'll tell you, we got this situation going on in our shop. We have mostly younger guys as service advisors, and I want to say that they do a pretty good job, but there are times where they just fumble the fucking ball big time. But we have an older gentleman, and he is really, really fucking good at what he does. And they don't have any respect for him because he's an older guy. And I fucking kind of hate that. But this guy's really good at what he does as far as I'm concerned. I love him. And he has learned so much over time that when he deals with people, they just love him because he knows how to do what he does. He has taken the time in the past to assess what has happened with some of the difficult customers he's had. And he can deal with them properly. And he, but the problem I have is not that he's good, he's great, but the other people, the other service advisors that we have, don't look to him for knowledge or experience. They don't look to him to be the model of how things get done. They basically just don't give a fuck is what they do. It's ridiculous. You can count on it. I had a situation today where we asked a service advisor a question about something and he didn't feel like it was something that he should be involved with. He said, I don't give a fuck. He didn't give a fuck. Even though the customer was his, wasn't his customer anymore. I don't give a fuck. Talk to somebody else about it. Like, could have answered that question in any way, shape, or form and chose that particular answer. So here's a guy who probably won't be doing it much longer. It's just not his bag, man. Not his bag. Now, I wanted to talk to you about, I didn't want to bring you a how to deal with shitty customers or how to deal with upset customers or whatever you want to call them. But I wanted to bring to you things that customers do that make them assholes. And I honestly had trouble finding something, but I did find something here. And this is a list of 10 things, which is beautiful. 10 is such a nice round number. And these are 10 things that customers do that piss everybody off, not just you as a mechanic, but the service advisor, maybe even the fucking service manager, maybe even the parts driver for that matter, or maybe the carporter, who knows? It's just shit that they do, and they don't realize that they're being dumb fucks, okay? So here's number one. Number one, I'm going to broad stroke the shit out of this one too. Hope you can hang on here through this one. Number one, withholding vital information. Oh my God. And my service advisors do this too. I regaled you with a tale last week of a service advisor who said that a lady said her car didn't do something, and come to find out after much consternation, it never did that. It wasn't an option for that fucking car. Why she said it didn't do it and made it sound like it used to do it, I don't know. But the advisor, he didn't give a shit. He didn't give a shit. Did she withhold vital information? Yeah. She could have said, hey, can my car lock if when I walk away, or is that an option that I don't have? He could have said anything, and he could have wrote anything different on the arrow, but he didn't. He didn't, and I wasted time looking up and finally finding that it was an option that fucking car didn't have. Number two, blame your mechanic for other problems. Oh my Lord. If I was to ask you all to raise your hand if this has ever happened to you, there'd be a lot of raised hands in America. I can tell you that right now. Oh my God. The worst was when I used to work at a Pep Boys store and they fixed cars there. Now, I didn't fix cars there. I was working in a parts department. That was my thing at the time. And I used to hear some of the fucking most outrageous shit because people, you know, and I've said this before, it's been a while since I said it, but most of the time when people have a car and it breaks, they try to figure out who they can blame it on. And then right after that, I mean, maybe even like a second or two later, they try to figure out if they can get somebody else to pay for it. Lots of fucking asshole customers do that. Lots of them. And so they'll come in and say some of the most outrageous shit you've ever heard. I had one where a lady got a taillight bulb installed. And then she came back later and said, oh, you guys fixed my taillight. Now my alternator's bad. Totally different end of the car, honey. And you're not getting anywhere with that one. What was some of the other ones? Guy got a tire put on his car. Now his brakes are bad. Yeah, well, it could happen, but it's really out of the realm of possibility. Lots of customers like to complain about stuff that gets broken by the mechanic. But then when you go back and you look at the footage, because almost all shops now have cameras in the drive-on or wherever the customers parked their car, and they can clearly see that dent was there when you got out of the car, when you fucking showed up. So go fuck yourself, honey. Blaming the mechanic for other problems, that's a bad thing to do. Don't do that. We cause enough problems that we hopefully own up to and take care of and become responsible for. Blaming us for shit that we're not responsible for needs to fucking kind of stop. Number three, hovering. It says here, remember that creepy, annoyed feeling you got when your sixth grade teacher stood over your shoulder watching you answer questions on a geography quiz? Yeah, it's kind of the same fucking thing. I would really prefer that people don't watch me fix their car, but I got to tell you, and I've said this before in the past, boys and girls, it's coming. It's coming because there's so much liability now, and people are just so litigious. They're so sue happy. They want to sue everybody for everything. And the only way you can really protect yourself, honestly, if you own a business, is to just fucking video it. You know, If somebody says, oh, you know, you put a rear view mirror on the passenger side of my car, and now my left front tire is flat. You go to the video, and go, see, your left front tire was flat when you showed up, asshole. You're going to have to do that. So you're going to be watched, maybe by a camera, maybe in person. I don't know. I think I've talked to some mechanics who had shops that they worked in where the customer waiting lounge had windows into the shop and they could watch you do what you do. So I don't know if that, I never had that myself personally. So I don't know if that actually cut down on some of the shenanigans. I know we talked about sports equipment at one point in time being in the back of a car. It's always a bad idea. I've caught a lot of fucking touchdown passes over the middle of the shop and scored a lot of fucking hat trick fucking goals in hockey with a hockey stick that somebody left in the back of a car, golf balls, tennis balls, every kind of, you know, boxing gloves. Fuck, don't leave them in the fucking car. Don't leave them in the car. I will beat the shit out of the guy next to me with them. Just don't fucking do it. And you know what, too? Honestly, just while we're on the subject here, don't leave your, if you're a sex worker, don't leave your leather gear in the trunk of your car. Don't do it. Get it out of there. Because I've documented it before. Go back and find it. I don't remember which one it was, but the shit that can happen to it is not, it's funny, but it's kind of not cool also too. Okay. Moving on. Let's get away from that here. Number four, monopolizing your mechanic's time. Oh, have we all had that? We have. All right. I think every one of us has had that. Sometimes I have to walk up front, speak to a service advisor, and a customer will go, hey, can I ask you a quick question? And I don't know why they always say that. There's no such thing as a quick question. There is no such thing. What they should say, hey, can I ask you five rapid fire questions in succession without listening to the fucking answer and chew up a half an hour of your time and so that you don't get paid anything for any of it? And then you go, yeah, sure. And then they go, whoa. And then it seems like it's always the same thing. They're trying to validate some idea or something that they feel like they know is true, but maybe somebody else at some point in time said, no, that's not true. So they want you to validate either their opinion or their friend's opinion, or they would prefer that you just validate their opinion. And the other three questions are, well, what if, you know, or, oh, is that the way it always is? Or is it like this sometimes? It's always somebody trying to find out if they actually are smart or if they're a fucking dumbass. And unfortunately, the answer comes back a lot of times that they're just a dumbass. I mean, yeah, you'll get customers who know what they're talking about, but we also had an eclipse the other day, and we're not going to have another one of them for about 20 some odd years. So it can happen, but it's fucking rare. It's like a Fabergé egg. Ugh. It's not going to happen. That was number four. Number five is something that we don't get from a lot of people. Number five is not giving your mechanic the benefit of the doubt. I've had a lot of people that have doubted, myself personally, I've had a lot of people who've doubted my diagnosis. They've doubted the repairs I've done. Isn't absolutely always right. Not 100% of the time, unfortunately. But I'll tell you what, it is not because I don't know what I'm up to. And it's not because I don't care. I definitely care. I work really hard to be right. And I will make myself look like a dumbass and ask other people in the shop questions about this, that, or the other thing, just so I can solicit their opinion as well. So that I make the best decision possible. And I think a lot of times some of the other technicians, when I ask them certain things, they think, you're a dumbass. You don't know that. I go, no, I know that. I just want to verify that what I'm thinking and what I'm coming up with is correct in your opinion, because obviously I value your opinion. If I fucking asked you, if I don't ask you, I don't give a fuck what your opinion is, quite frankly. And some people take it the right way, and some people do not. Giving your technician or the mechanic who's working on your shit the benefit of the doubt, you have to understand that if somebody's got tools and they're not a teenager, they didn't graduate from high school yesterday, they might have an idea what they're up to, especially if they offer to fix something for you. Because most people, if they don't know what they're doing, they're not going to offer to do something for you. I'm sure there's a few people out there who would actually do that just for the money, but I'd say a very great majority of people are not going to attempt to make a repair if they don't even have the slightest clue what they're doing. Okay, so give your mechanic the benefit of the doubt, especially if you know the guy or if you've been using him for a while, or if you're at a shop where he's been and you've been for quite some time, you've been there, you know, 10 times over the last 6 years, and they always take care of you. And if something goes wrong, you have to say, well, I It's just an honest mistake. I don't have to, you know, I don't have to go in and go crazy on the mechanic or the shop owner, because I know that they didn't do this on purpose. That's just not something that happens. There's no malice in what happened. Number six, don't be a yeller. Don't be fucking yelling. Don't come in and yell. It says here that it's embarrassing. It says here it's as embarrassing as peeing your pants. Let me tell you something. Without a prostate, peeing your pants is not embarrassing at all. In fact, it's a fucking daily, it's a daily activity. Don't be a yeller. A drawing attention to yourself by yelling and screaming, that's, you know, that's something customers should never do. But here again, some customers do it. Some customers feel like they have to yell to be heard and understood. And I got to say, I understand that, because when you yell, it certainly draws a hell of a lot of attention to you. And if that's what you're looking for, then give it a go. But it also causes a response in the people you're yelling at that you may not have envisioned, that you may not have anticipated. So it's probably best not to yell. Now, I have yelled at people. There's no question about that. I don't think I need to say that even. But for the most part, I don't turn it up to fucking 11 and rip the knob off. I certainly can. I can be very well heard at times. If I was to scream your name out from where I am now, you might hear it wherever you are. I can be very, very loud. If I yell at somebody, it's a muted kind of a, what the fuck are you doing? Kind of thing. It's not really that loud. It is very angry.
And typically obscene.
Well, you guys are all familiar with that. I don't need to tell you about that. But don't be like your Uncle Jimmy in that particular situation. Because like I said before, 75-80% of us out there as mechanics and a lot of the shops, 90-95% of the shops are out there trying to make an honest buck, doing the right thing by you. And if you have some sort of problem with it, yelling isn't going to help your cause at all. Number seven on this list is shopping around. Yeah, fuck. That. What the fuck? I mean, this happened. I'm just going to say it again. What the fuck? They come to me. They come to our shop. You know, we're a dealership. We're professionals. We're master techs. We've been to all kinds of training. We've worked on every car that our brand makes. We know what they do. We know what they don't do. We know what we suspect. And we get them in and we diagnose them. We tell you you need this, this, and this. And then you go, oh, I can get it done cheaper down the road. You sure can. Just remember, and I think all of you should remember this, because it's a lot of fucking things out there that fall under this particular heading. Good work isn't cheap. Cheap work isn't good. End of sentence. End of sentence. Okay, moving on. Number eight, getting the work done elsewhere after a diagnosis. That's the same thing as shopping around. Only you actually go and get the work done somewhere else after the diagnosis. It happens to me. It happens probably about a good dozen times a year. You know, about once a month, you get somebody who comes in and they just want answers to why this is not working and that's not working. And they're going to take it home and they're either going to do it themselves, which I got to say probably 30% of the time they can. The rest, 70% of the time, no fucking way. They can't do the job. They're going to end up having it towed to you with a job half done. Happens all the fucking time. All the time. Getting the work done somewhere else after we do the diagnosis, yeah, it's kind of a shitty deal, but it's going to happen, and really you got to kind of bite the bullet. And honestly, I think clandestinely anyway, we can kind of hope that we got the diagnosis wrong. Although we should never do that, okay? Don't do that. I know it's tempting, especially if you know the fucking, you know, you've looked at the guy's car fucking six times over the last 2 years and he never buys a fucking thing from you. And then when you look at it, you see all these aftermarket parts put on by Billy Bob's dick butt backwater fucking shop. And he's still got a problem with something else. And it's like, whatever. Number nine is, I just had to deal with this the other day. This was very bad. I don't know what kind of fucking dog they had. These people had a great big SUV, huge. And they had a dog bed in the back of it that took up two rows of seats. It was fucking enormous. It was bigger than my own personal bed. And it was thick, covered with thick white dog hair. Thick white dog hair. Now, folks, I love dogs and I think they're great. And as human beings, I honestly believe we don't deserve them because they're just the greatest thing going. But I don't want to have to deal with a dog odor or their hair, especially when I'm trying to fix something and I got to be right there where it is. It's like, ugh. It's almost disgusting. It's not, It's not going to make me throw up disgusting, but it's just disgusting. And then the dog smells. Sometimes dogs like to roll in shit or whatever else there is, and they just stink, you know? And even if they don't stink, after a while, yeah, they do. And there's other smells too that are going to come from a car. I've smelled it all, unfortunately. I've smelled a million smells and I rocked them all. No, there's just all kinds of shit that people can do to cars and make them stink. And some of that stuff, I mean, it really does call up a gag reflex. This is something that customers do, and I wish they would fucking stop doing that. Number 10, and we talked about this several times, but number 10 is having unrealistic expectations. I got to say that when a customer comes in and they have some sort of expectation of what should happen and how fast it should happen, I want to know how fast they can do it. You know, if somebody says to me, I need a four-wheel brakes, pads and rows all the way around. I need to be out of here by 2:00 and it's 12:15. They say, well, you can do it in that amount of time. Oh, really? How about you? Can you do it in that amount of time? Well, no, I don't know what I'm doing. That's precisely what I thought. That is precisely what I'm getting at too. You don't know what's involved with doing anything to your car. You don't know how any of it works. All you know is that you want whatever it is you want done to your car by 2:00 today. Sorry. That's a very unrealistic expectation. And you almost need to there's some people who are just going to insist that they need this, that, and the other thing, and they just don't have a clue. They really just don't have a clue what you have to go through to repair something or to diagnose it properly and then repair it. They just don't have any idea. I mean, I don't, you know, and this is the part that kills me is I don't go to the doctor and say, hey, you know, I need to have a, you know, maybe I need to have a testicle removed. Can you get that done in 5 minutes? You know, I need to go home and, I don't know, feed the fish or something, whatever. It doesn't even really matter what you do. I mean, I used to say all the time when people would say, oh, I got to have my car by 2:00. I said, if you're not in the middle of curing cancer, then fuck you and your 2:00. I need my car by, bitch. If you're not curing cancer, eat shit, okay? You're just going to go home and watch TV. You're just going to go pick up the kids, and then they're going to want to go to McDonald's, and you're going to be on a highway in front of me going really fucking slow, looking at your phone, ignoring your kids. Fuck you, okay? I'll fix it when I fix it. Don't give me any of these unrealistic expectations. All right, those were 10 things that lousiest, okay, top 10 lousiest things customers do. Here was another one. I'm going to broad stroke this really quickly because I kind of want to be done so I can go to bed. Because like I said, I've been kind of tired, and I hope that you guys get enough sleep. Your Uncle Jimmy doesn't. Here's some negative Google reviews of auto shops and how they thought you should respond to them. This was kind of kooky. Here's one. There's 5 examples here. We'll broad stroke them real quick. Had a really poor experience with the service writer. They had his name in there. They redacted it. It's fine. It was probably his name was Justin. He walked around cursing and complaining about phone calls coming into the shop. He told me I should have gotten a more expensive oil change and complained about the little profit he would make on the oil change I selected. This lady, I feel like it was a lady. There was no names given. She gave them 2 stars. Now, if a service writer is cursing and complaining about the phone calls and told me that I should have paid more for the oil change I got, I wouldn't give him any fucking stars. I'd find his boss and say, listen, you need to fire this piece of shit. And then, of course, you get the usual, oh, we're sorry response from the owner. I'm so sorry. Your experience was not what it should have been. Oh, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. No, you're not. So, listen to it. I'm going to tell you something right now, folks. That the word sorry is the most overused fucking word in the English language right now. And I fucking hate it. I hate it. People feel like, I don't know why either. I don't know why this is. People feel like they can do whatever the fuck they want to you. They could take your shit. They can ruin your shit. They can kick you in the balls, whatever. And all they got to do is write that little check out. I'm sorry. You know, pay to the order of whoever they fucked up. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. That doesn't fix shit. Stop saying you're sorry and stop doing whatever it is you're doing that makes you feel sorry even when you really fucking don't, which is what you mean when you say, sorry, I'm sorry. It doesn't mean a fucking thing. Number 2, sorry about that. It's just that people say that shit to me. I'm sorry. They do nasty, mean, evil shit to me, and then they just, sorry, I'm sorry. Doesn't work. Here was the number 2 example was just 2 words. 1-star review, too slow. T-O-O, slow, too slow. too slow, not fast, too slow. And then, of course, the owner writes back, thank you for taking the time to leave us a review. And then he goes on and he says, we apologize for the long wait. Listen, that is simply somebody not lowering that guy's expectations. How fucking fast do you want your repair or your maintenance? How fast do you want it to be? Because I'll tell you what, I'll drain the oil in your fucking shit, throw the plug back in, and fucking throw it right out the door so you could drive off. Too slow? Well, it's going to be really fucking slow when it blows up and throws a rod outside of the block because I didn't want to be too slow, so I forgot or didn't put oil in it on purpose. Whatever. You don't want that to happen. In fact, if somebody's working on your car, I would give the same advice to a doctor. Take your fucking time. Be thorough. Check everything. Fill everything up. Top everything off. Set the tire pressures. Clean the windshield. Do it all. Vacuum the leaves out of the cowl. Do it all. Don't fuck around. Be thorough. Don't fuck off and do, you know, not do anything if they're waiting. That's the worst situation in the world when somebody sitting in a waiting lounge feels like they know how long it should take to do whatever it is you're doing. And they don't have the proper, they don't know. They just don't know. They don't have a fucking clue. Number three, here's what they told me the tires, which they spelled wrong. You know me, Mr. Grammar Nazi. They told me the tires I bought from them will last 45,000 miles. Whoever fucking told you that was just straight up lying. Tires don't last 45,000 miles. They just don't. I don't give a fuck what you put them on. They're rubber. They're soft. They rub on the road. They leave rubber behind after 45,000 miles. They should be straight up fucking bald. But they only lasted 12,000 miles. And when I complained, they said, it depends on how you drive. Well, actually, it does. Because the cars I work on, some of the cars I work on are sport versions of the models that my brand makes. And every fucking one of them, there's only two kinds of tires for them, the sport versions. There's either new tires or bald tires. There's no in between. There's no fucking in between. They're real super soft, super soft. Give you great traction, great handling, great ride quality. They don't last for shit. You got 12,000 miles out of the tires on your car. I don't know what kind of car you were driving. If somebody told you that they were warrantied for 45,000 miles, that's one thing. But if they just said offhandedly, oh, they should last you 45,000 miles, that's a fucking guy who doesn't know what the fuck he's talking about. Really, almost no tires last you 45,000 miles. And when I complained, they said, it depends on how you drive. I didn't know I had to drive in the air in order to protect the tires, which they spelled wrong again. Better you pay $200 more and buy from Costco with 100% guarantee, again, guarantee, spelled wrong. One star. And what kills me is that each one of these places that these reviews were made by, one of them had a 4.7, which is really good, 4.4, which is good. This last one had a 4.8, which is really, really fucking good. This is a number four example. Here's a, didn't fix my BMW. So we got a real fucking grammar hound here. The didn't fixed my BMW. Rather, the asked me for $120 for doing nothing. I'm not even sure what to make of that. I think what he meant to say was they didn't fix my BMW. Rather, they asked me for $120 for doing nothing. It doesn't sound right at all. You missed something besides English class in high school. You missed something. Thank you for taking the time to tell us your concern, you fucking ignorant, illiterate asshole. First and foremost, we would like to apologize for any inconvenience we may have caused you. We charged you only for in-depth computer diagnostic for your BMW. You didn't approve the job. So how can we fix your car? We value your business. Please let us know how we can keep you happy, keep you as a happy customer. You know what? There's a thing going on out there where people say, oh, we fired this customer. We don't want him to come here anymore. It has to happen. Some people, this guy, you know, on top of being an illiterate idiot, they didn't fix his car because he didn't authorize repair. It's like, how fucking stupid can you be? And this particular shop had a 4.8 Google review. Man, you almost don't get better than that. You can get a 4.9, you can get a 5.0, but you're not going to get that. I mean, it had 476 reviews, so man, that's real fucking good. Number five, this is a shorty one too. Does anyone know where my car is? Because I dropped it off here and I lost it now. Your vehicle is, and this is the response, your vehicle is not here. I'm not sure what this review is about, however. I've checked my database and you are not a current customer and there is no appointments under your name either. We'd love to help you. However, I'm not sure how this review, this was a review that got left. It said, I can't find my car. It's like, you're probably in the drive-in at a Chinese fucking, at a Chinese food place going, and then, no, and then. Dude, where's my car? I'm sorry. I get a little punchy when I get tired. You should be ready for that by now. Here's the last bit. I'm just going to do this really, really fucking fast here. It's time to stop talking. The death, this is called, this is what I was talking about. The death of the customer is always right. This is, this article is called, and it's got an actual person who wrote it, which is cool. The death of the customer is always right. That died a long time ago. The customer is, in our business, the customer is almost never right, but they do need to be happy. That's what they should say, okay? What they're just talking about is people getting unhinged and going over the edge and going off on people, not knowing what the fuck they're talking about. All right, so what this tells you is that the customers are not right. Some of them are assholes. Some of them are jerks. But they should be happy. You should try to make the customers happy. But you know what? There has to be a limit. There has to be a line in the sand for making customers happy. Don't let anybody, if you're a mobile mechanic, if you're working on stuff at your house, if you're doing side jobs for people, definitely as a personal thing, don't let these people get into your lunch. Don't let them get into your pocket. Make sure they pay you a very respectable wage to do work for them. Believe me, I know you're saving them money. They know you're saving them money. They should be very happy. If they're not, don't associate with them anymore, okay? Because anytime you do side jobs for people, they're going to be paying a lot, lot less than they normally would if they took it to a shop or a dealer. Don't let them give you any fucking shit. And if they do, send them on their way. Just tell them to get the fuck away from me. I don't need this shit, okay? Be careful, too, when dealing with customers, especially if they have their phones out. They may be filming you. They may be recording you. It's just the way of the world now. Everybody's filming everybody and putting it on the internet for their own gratification and maybe just to verify that they were right, or maybe find out that they were wrong. That happens sometimes too. It does backfire on people sometimes. They think that they were right, and then people come on the internet and tell them, no, you were wrong, and you're an asshole too to boot. And they can destroy your life. There's been people who've been fired because of some of their social interactions. So you have to be careful. If you work for one of these touchy-feely companies that's very politically correct and woke or whatever the fuck they call it now, And you're called out, singled out, vilified on the internet, on a social media, they can conceivably come in and just kick you loose, cut you loose, fire you. And it shouldn't be that way, but nobody's really in charge, are they? Nobody's in charge of the internet. So always remember that, okay? So just be careful when you have to deal with customers. There's some shifty motherfuckers out there. You want to try to have empathy for them, but man, don't let them get, like I said, don't let them in your lunchbox, all right? And if you got an employer that's doing the same thing, man, just get yourself out there, get a resume, start looking around. There's a lot better places to work. The place where I work is pretty good. I recommend it highly for people, to be quite honest with you. I know it's a shameless plug, but what are you going to do? A lot of you have figured out where I'm working anyway, that's good. That's fine. That's fine. I'm not hiding. You know, I'm not a woodchuck or a prairie dog. I'm not going to duck into a hole or anything like that. All right. That's enough for your Uncle Jimmy. He needs to shut the fuck up and go to bed. So he's just going to say, see ya.